The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war claims more Palestinian civilian lives in Gaza. The death toll since October 7 tops 20,300. Pressure mounting on Israel's Netanyahu as more of his troops and captives are killed in the wake of indiscriminate bombings of Gaza. And on Christmas weekend, more people demand an immediate ceasefire to stop the U.S.-Israeli genocide against Palestinians. It's good to have you with us. Israel keeps pounding the besieged Gaza Strip, where every new air raid and shelling further worsens the humanitarian situation. According to Gaza officials, more than 200 people were killed in the past day. The latest attacks targeted the southern city of Khan Yunis and the northern city of Jabalia. The genocidal war in Gaza is now in its 79th day. The death toll stands at nearly 20,300. Some 54,000 people have been wounded. The majority of victims are women and children. Those who have survived the war live in dire conditions. The World Health Organization has renewed warning that famine is looming in the Palestinian territory. There has been a mass burial for the Palestinians killed during Israeli strikes in Jabalia, north of Gaza City. After regime forces withdrew from Jabalia, rescuers recovered the dead bodies and buried them in an improvised cemetery. The Palestinian Health Ministry says that dozens of Palestinians were killed this week and some publicly executed during an Israeli military offensive. The aerial and tank bombardments of Jabalia left dozens of people dead or wounded. Palestinian resistance groups have launched new missile attacks at Israeli towns and military bases in retaliation for the onslaught in the Gaza Strip. The Al-Quds Brigades, the military wing of Islamic Jihad, says it performed several major counterattacks against invading forces. They fired mortar shells at the gatherings of Israeli forces in different parts of Gaza. They also hit a Merkava tank with a tandem missile in northern Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigades also targeted Israeli tanks and armored vehicles across Gaza. In a major operation, they blew up a booby-trapped tunnel after Israeli special forces entered it and later fired shells at a rescue team, leaving some casualties. They also destroyed five Israeli tanks using two unexploded Israeli rockets in the Jabalia Balat area. The health facilities in the Gaza Strip strive to cope with the overwhelming tallies of Palestinian injuries as Israel's unabated air raids go on. Our Gaza correspondent has a report.
The indiscriminate shelling that has been pounding all areas of Gaza Strip has resulted in paralysis of the health sector in the coastal territory. The already collapsed health sector in Gaza has pushed the wounded people to undergo operations in their injured limbs without anesthesia. In the meantime, the suffering of people with dialysis has aggravated incrementally as the instruments and medical appliances became completely overwhelmed with the double number of patients.
The situation is so dire and difficult. We lack all basic medical needs over the continuous Israeli airstrikes. We receive thousands of the injured people with difficult injuries and burns. Even the patients of the chronic diseases are suffering. We don't have enough medical staff. We don't have enough beds. Many injured people were treated on the floor without anesthesia. Many injured people had their limbs amputated over the lack of medical necessities.
Another aspect of this prolonged onslaught is unfolding with the intake of contaminated water and malnutrition. Children are suffering from a wide scale of intestinal diseases as a result of having no access to the basic humanitarian necessities.
Gaza's health sector was suffering even before the aggression due to the suffocating siege. However, with this unprecedented aggression, the suffering exacerbated, particularly the need to medicine and cure of the sick people. There is a severe shortage of the needed medical supplies and needs, particularly those needed for the dialysis department. On the other hand, we received many cases of children diagnosed with intestinal diseases because of the contaminated water and malnutrition.
For the people here, it takes standing in long lines in front of the pharmacy, waiting to get the medicine needed for any illness, often it's unavailable because of the overuse of all kinds of medicine.
My child is 1 year old. He's sick. He was infected with stomach flu, and he has chronic convulsions. He was lying in the Nasser hospital in Gaza when the Israeli forces attacked it. I attempted to bring the medicine with me when I came to the middle area, but the Israeli soldiers on the checkpoint ordered me to drop it. For days, I've been trying to get the medicine, but I couldn't. Every time they tell me it's unavailable, I don't know what to do.
As we have just seen, these are some details of the continuous and the extended disaster that the Palestinian people are living and experiencing these moments in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital as a place taking shelter by the Palestinian people. It's clear that the people here are trapped between the rock of the continuous airstrikes and the hard place of the deteriorating humanitarian conditions in Gaza Strip. Ja'ab Musabbih, the middle area of Gaza Strip.
Now, Palestinians and the Christians in the Palestinian city of Bethlehem have canceled their Christmas celebrations over the Israeli genocide in Gaza. They get in one of the city's major squares to raise the Palestinian flag. Earlier, we're joined by Mazen Kumsia, a Palestinian scientist and author from Bethlehem, for his take on that issue.
This year, unfortunately, there will not be celebration, so to speak. There will be the usual religious ceremonies. We still, kind of commemorate and consider this an important season for Jesus had been born, but we will not have celebrations. There's no Christmas tree in the Nativity Square. There's no lights or decorations. There's only mourning for the death. For the martyred people of Gaza, 23,000 so far, and the numbers keep going up. A genocide that's sponsored by the United States. And so we also speak to the international community to tell them to stop this genocide. This is a season of hope. We are still hopeful. I think the Zionist movement is losing, and their genocide of the civilians is compensating for its losses, for its attempt to bury the Palestinian cause over 75 years, have come to a dead end, basically. And so we are still hopeful. We still pray for peace. We still hope that there will be an end of this genocide, that the massacres that are being committed, the starvation, lack of water, lack of medicine, the spreading of diseases that are now affecting 500,000 people in Gaza.
The Israeli military has released names of 8 soldiers killed in fresh fighting with Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip. They were killed in southern or central Gaza on Saturday. Israel says 158 of its troops have been killed since the beginning of the ground invasion of Gaza in October. Hamas's movement, however, says the actual number is much higher and reports daily heavy blows to the regime's military. Israel has set out several objectives in launching its onslaught on Gaza, including dismantling Hamas militarily and releasing the captives in Gaza. But none of those goals have been achieved. Now, thousands of Israelis have once again held rallies against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for his failure to secure the release of captives in Gaza.
We need to make sure that Benjamin Netanyahu will go away. He makes more harm than good, and he betrayed the people. The absolutely traitor. So we want him to go. We've been protesting for a year now, and it's just getting worse. So it needs to be now.
Now, the protesters are angry at Netanyahu's handling of the case. They say that they want to exert more pressure on the cabinet to bring them back. The new rallies came days after the Israeli military mistakenly killed 3 captives in Gaza. Several captives have also been killed in the regime's airstrikes on Gaza. Hamas movement said on Saturday 5 more captives might have been killed in the attacks. According to Israeli officials, 129 people are still held by Hamas. Last month, more than 100 captives were released during a brief truce. And meanwhile, protests against Israeli genocide in Gaza have been continuing in the U.S. during the Christmas holiday weekend. Protesters in New York City said there should be no business and Christmas as usual while genocide is taking place in the Palestinian land. They urged people to join the boycott and sanctions movement to demand an end to U.S. support for Israel. That was one of the several demonstrations across the U.S. in one of the busiest shopping days of the year. Hundreds of protesters also filled the streets of the Italian city Milan to express solidarity with Palestine. They, too, called for boycotting Israel and saving Gaza. Since the beginning of the U.S.-Israel genocide in Gaza, mass rallies have regularly been held across the world to stop the onslaught. A new rally in support of Palestine has been held in Sydney ahead of Christmas festivities. Thousands gathered in the city center, demanding an end to Israel's atrocities in Gaza.
On Saturday, about 2,000 people joined the protest in solidarity with besieged Palestinians in Sydney's iconic Hyde Park. The initiative, dubbed Stop the Genocide in Gaza, was organized by the Palestine Action Group, a Sydney-based activist formation committed to supporting Palestine and opposing the Israeli apartheid. Pro-Palestine rallies have been held weekly across all major Australian cities over the past 2.5 months. On its Facebook page, the Palestine Action Group presented Saturday's rally in Sydney by saying that Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza continues with the complicity of the world's governments, especially the US and including Australia.
We don't hear enough about the non-stop killings, the atrocities that are happening in Gaza. And meanwhile, mainstream countries like the USA stand by and continue to support Israel, continuing on its line that it's using. I disagree with all of that, and I'm going to find it very hard to ever forgive America for backing Israel and what it's doing, but delaying the ceasefire.
During Saturday's rally in Sydney, which occurred a day earlier than usual, with organizers wanting to maximize numbers ahead of Christmas, protesters chanted slogans against the apartheid Israeli regime in Gaza and in the West Bank, calling for Australia to cut ties with Tel Aviv.
Earlier this week, more than 50 former and current lawmakers from the Labour Party, the ruling force at the national level in Australia, broke ranks calling for a rethink on policy towards Israel. The Australian political figures signed a letter condemning Israel's domination of Palestine and demanding Canberra recognize Palestine as a state.
I think there is a lot of people who are good people, who want to support humanity, who want to support a stop, a permanent ceasefire. I think they are scared, but I do believe we're seeing small, small shifts, and those people who are not too concerned about others going to climb the hierarchy of politics, I think they're coming up and standing up against humanity.
On Saturday, a rally in support of Palestinians was also organized at Melbourne's State Library. Max Civili, Sydney.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has lashed out at the U.S. for blocking a U.N. Security Council resolution on the establishment of a ceasefire in Gaza. Ayatollah Khamenei added that the U.S. has been disgraced as the Israeli war on Gaza helped expose the true face of the Western civilization. He said the Palestinians' great victory lies in the fact that they debunked the West and the U.S.'s false claim of being an advocate of human rights. Ayatollah Khamenei underlined that there is no difference between the Israeli regime, the U.S., and the U.K. They're all the same. He said there is no doubt that one day the Israeli regime will be wiped off the face of the earth. Tehran has held an international conference on Palestine. In the opening remark, Iranian President Raisi said that the U.S. must be tried for the crimes committed against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
The U.S. must be put on trial. The Zionist regime and the Americans must be put on trial on charges of crimes against humanity and act of genocide. They must be put on trial in an international tribunal. And they must be prosecuted in order to administer justice.
The writer said that the true face of the U.S. was uncovered in the course of the Israeli genocide in Gaza. The president said that any resolution proposed at the UN Security Council to bring an end to the Israeli massacre in Gaza was vetoed by the U.S. The writer said that Washington has left no stone unturned to provide as much support to the Tel Aviv regime as possible. The president noted that Americans have the blood of Palestinian women and children on their hands. He said that the Israeli Gaza massacre unveiled the hypocritical nature of the U.S. Raisi also stressed that the Palestinians have the right to self-defense, and the Islamic Republic has always stood and will continue to stand by the people of Palestine in their fight against the Israeli regime. And that brings us to the end of this newscast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khamenei, in a meeting with Iran's sports champions and medalists of the 2023 Asian Games and the Asian Paragames. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyye on November 22, 2023. If I want to give a summary to you athletes about recent events, that summary or short sentence is that the Zionist regime was knocked out by the Al-Aqsa flood operation. In other words, Hamas, a group of resistance fighters and not a government or a country that is well equipped, but a group of resistance fighters was able to knock out the usurping Zionist regime despite all its resources. That is a summary of what has taken place. Up until today, they have not been able to pull themselves out from under the pressure and disgrace of this defeat.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Yes, they show their power, but where? In a hospital for Ghazan patients, in Ghazan schools, and on the heads of the Ghazan people who have nowhere to go. This show of power has no value. This is similar to an athlete who loses in a competition and retaliates by physically attacking and verbally abusing the fans of the opposing team. In other words, there is truly nothing more disgraceful than what the Zionist regime has done. The massive defeat that the Zionist regime has suffered will not be compensated for by these bombardments. These bombardments will shorten the life of the usurping regime even more. This oppression and these atrocities will not go unanswered. They need to realize this. Today, the entire world has understood why an Iranian athlete won't agree to compete with a Zionist opponent on the field. The world realizes this now. It's because he or she, the Zionist athlete, is a criminal. He or she is coming onto the field to compete on behalf of a criminal regime. Helping him or her is helping the criminal terrorist regime. Anyway, I thank all of you. I thank every single athlete here. I thank these dear young people who exercised here and were able to exercise so beautifully inside this artificial goat. I would like to thank the young people who were beating the drums here. I am thankful to all of you. May you be successful and assisted by God, God willing. May God's greetings, mercy, and blessings be upon you.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Hunger has become the most pressing of the myriad problems facing hundreds of thousands of displaced Gaza Palestinians, with aid trucks able to bring in only a small fraction of what is needed, and distribution uneven due to the chaos of the war. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based rights group, has found that 71% of people in the Gaza Strip suffer from extreme hunger due to Israel's devastating war on the Palestinian territory and the regime's method of using starvation as a weapon. The group released the figure after it conducted an analytical study of a sample of 1,200 people in Gaza. According to the study's findings, 98% of respondents said that they eat insufficient amounts of food, while 64% of the participants admitted to eating grass, immature food, and expired materials to satiate their hunger.
All 2.2 million people are hungry, meaning that they are in crisis or worse food security situation.
More than 130,000 of Gaza's most vulnerable children, that is newborns up to 2 years of age, are not receiving the critical life-saving breastfeeding or age-appropriate complementary feeding that they absolutely require. So that's our scenario. Without sufficient safe water, food and sanitation that only a humanitarian ceasefire would bring, child deaths due to disease could well surpass those already killed in bombardments.
The study found that the rate of access to water in the Gaza Strip, including drinking, bathing and cleaning water, is 1.5 liters per person per day. This is 15 liters less than the minimum amount of water required for survival at the level required by international standards. Additionally, the study examined the effects of malnutrition and a lack of access to clean drinking water. 66% of the study sample reported having experienced diarrhea, skin rashes, or intestinal diseases in the past month. Even in Rafah, which has a crossing to Egypt through which aid trucks enter, the dearth of food and clean water is so severe it is causing people to get ill.
The contaminated water is another issue, as the water is not 100% clean. So children and adults suffer from intestinal problems such as vomiting and diarrhea. So I ran out of antidiarrheal medications, Flagyl medicines, which is an intestinal disinfectant, and Silabrin, which is antibiotics for intestinal infections. There's a significant loss of these drugs.
Since the start of its genocide in Gaza, Israel has imposed a comprehensive blockade on the Strip and prevented supplies of food, water, fuel, and other humanitarian necessities from reaching the more than 2.3 million residents of the Strip. Israel's use of starvation as a weapon has intensified since October 7 and has included cutting off all food supplies to Gazans, as well as bombing and destroying the Strip's bakeries, factories, food stores.
We were compelled to come here as there are no bakeries available. The people here who are our friends are baking bread to aid the community. Procuring flour is challenging for us, as a 20-kilogram bag costs around 300 to 400 shekels, which is a substantial amount.
About 577,000, meaning more than 500,000 people, are already in catastrophic levels of hunger, meaning they're essentially starving. That is like one in every four people.
Speeches and statements from Israeli officials promoting a campaign to deliberately block access to necessary resources for the Gaza population as a strategy indicate that Israel has not made these intentions a secret. The Israeli blockade, on top of the genocidal aggression, has plunged Gaza into humanitarian catastrophe, where lack of access to sanitation and safe water has increased the prevalence of waterborne diseases. The Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court says that intentionally starving civilians by, quote, depriving them of objects indispensable to their survival, including willfully impeding relief supplies, is a war crime.
The people in the hospitals, yes, they need everything. They need medical supplies, but what they ask for first is food and water, the very basics. They do not have them. One of my colleagues described people lying on the floor in severe pain, in agony, but they weren't asking for pain relief, they were asking for water.
The plight of Gaza's 2.3 million people has become desperate amid the war. Around 80% of Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip have been displaced by the violence, while efforts to get aid into the territory have struggled. Alarmed humanitarian organizations have been calling for a ceasefire and denouncing the shocking cost of the catastrophic war, which amounts to a collective punishment of the civilian population of Gaza.
We are homeless. We can't go back to our houses. I want to see my children. I want to go back to my husband and to my house. It's unfair. It's so unfair.
This is a firm response to Israel's genocide and aggression against Palestinians. It has been about 2.5 months since Israel launched its deadly onslaught on the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Muslim countries missed no chance to deplore the Israeli crimes verbally, but there were few, including Yemen, that firmly stood in solidarity with defenseless Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. After carrying out drone and missile strikes on Israeli targets, Yemen's armed forces have now been targeting Israel-bound vessels in waters around their country. The army has time and again stated it would stop its operations if Israel stops its aggression and ends its blockade on Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces have also refuted claims about targeting ships moving toward other destinations. All vessels except Israel-bound ones can safely sail through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. As usual, Israel's main backer, the U.S., has been trying to reverse the impact of the Yemeni operations by announcing the formation of a maritime coalition under the pretext that it would protect the transit in the Red Sea. But Washington's main goal is to protect Israel's interest. However, Yemen's Ansarullah has issued strong warning to the U.S. Mohammed al-Bukhaiti, a senior Ansarullah official, says the newly formed coalition will get a painful response if it violates the sovereignty of the Arab country. but how significant the Yemeni operations in the Red Sea are. In recent weeks, Yemeni naval forces have targeted several vessels sailing through the Red Sea toward Israel. Their primary goal has been to exert economic pressure on Tel Aviv, and they have been rather successful. Several major companies have suspended their shipments to and from Israel in the wake of Yemen's operations in the Red Sea. This has dealt a heavy blow to Israel's economy, with the latest reports indicating that the port of Eilat is hardly hit as the result of this disruption.
The non-arrival of ships to Eilat means that there is no income for the port, while the fixed expenses for its maintenance and operation remain the same, and we have a substantial negative flow.
The almost complete halt to the arrival of ships to Eilat has led to an 80% fall in the port's profits. This is while reports say that Egypt's Suez Canal has seen no harm to its maritime activities during Yemen's operations against Israel-bound ships. The Red Sea is a strategic trade route connecting Asia to Europe through the Suez Canal. About 12% of global trade passes through the Red Sea, including 30% of global container traffic. The disruptions in this area have had a direct impact on global economy. Now, cargo ships traveling from Asia to Europe have to sail around the African continent. This has increased the transit time and led to higher freight rates and delays. Also, shipping insurance costs have jumped by tens of thousands of dollars a day, and oil prices have gone up as well. To sum up, the international community has been unable to stop the Israeli crimes against Palestinians through political means. However, it seems Yemenis have employed a successful tactic to pressurize Israel.
UN agencies continue to sound the alarm bell over the desperate humanitarian situation in the besieged coastal territory. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees has warned that the people of Gaza are running out of time and options. Philippe Lazzaroni warned that Gaza is very far from an adequate humanitarian response.
The people of Gaza are running out of time and options as they face bombardment, deprivation, and disease in an ever shrinking space.
He described the situation in Gaza as hell on earth and said people in the Palestinian territory are facing the darkest chapter of its history since 1948. He described seeing people halting in aid truck and in desperation and swallowing down the food found inside where they stood in the street. Further noted that the people of Gaza are now crammed into less than one-third of their original territory near the Egyptian border, and the dire situation might spark an exodus. The city of Rafah on the Egyptian border, the only crossing where aid is entering Gaza, has seen its population explode from 280,000 to more than a million.
Rafah is the epicenter of the displacement of the Gazan. There is over 1 million people who have fled in this governorate, and most of them, as we know, have been moved more than once since the beginning of the war. Rafah has quadrupled its number of people overnight, and especially when the offensive in the south has started.
UN officials have warned that any such exodus would be extremely destabilizing for Egypt, for the Sinai region, and it would make a problematic Palestinian problem more difficult. It is now widely believed that the Israeli regime is deliberately targeting residential areas and the critical infrastructure in Gaza in order to make the territory unlivable for its residents. Israel has already pushed the U.S. and its other Western allies to persuade Egypt to accept Palestinian people in the Sinai Peninsula.
It seems very difficult to us that if there was a population movement outside Gaza, I think that can only mean Egypt. It would be extremely destabilizing for Egypt, for the Sinai region, and that would make a solution to the Palestinian problem even more difficult.
The healthcare system is collapsing. Expect public order to completely break down soon. And an even worse situation could unfold, including epidemic diseases and increased pressure for mass displacement into Egypt. I said that we are facing a severe risk of collapse of the humanitarian system.
Yeah. UNRWA, and many other aid organizations have already issued serious warnings about the dire conditions in Gaza. The UN Humanitarian Office also said that Gaza faces a public health disaster due to the collapse of its health system and the spread of disease. Doctors in Gaza are warning about the spread of diseases, especially among children, due to overcrowding and unhygienic conditions of makeshift camps, as well as the lack of medicine and clean water there. The lack of food, clean water, and shelter have worn down hundreds of thousands of traumatized people, and with the health system on its knees, its inevitable epidemics will rip through the territory.
We all know that the healthcare system is or has collapsed. We've got a textbook formula for epidemics and a public health disaster. This is in part, of course, because the shelters have long ago exceeded their full capacity, with people lining up for hours just to get to a toilet.
According to the data compiled by the World Health Organization, from November 29th to December 10, cases of diarrhea in children under the age of 5 jumped 66% and climbed 55% for the rest of the population in the same period. The UN agency said the numbers were inevitably incomplete due to the meltdown of all systems and services in Gaza because of the war. Doctors of the pediatric ward at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza have told reporters that the ward was overrun with children suffering extreme dehydration, causing kidney failure in some cases, while severe diarrhea was four times higher than normal.
The conditions of the war have led to the spreading of a lot of epidemics and sicknesses, the first epidemic of which has been one of acute gastroenteritis, which we have most frequent cases of in the children's ward. There are a number of patients come with cases of extreme dehydration, some of which can get to the point of kidney failure or weakening kidney function. Things are very bad.
I have four children with gastrointestinal diseases and flu. My youngest son has a cold, but we don't have any medicine. I have never felt as helpless and miserable in my life as I do now.
Since the truce between Israel and Hamas collapsed on December 1, hundreds of thousands of people have moved to makeshift shelters, abandoned buildings, schools, and tents. Many others are sleeping in the open with little access to toilets or water to bathe.
Children sleep in the tent, while some adults have no choice but to sleep on the streets. There's no food, no water. The children lack milk and diapers. The situation is dire, with no sanitary conditions or toilets.
Gaza's 2.3 million people now find themselves in a daily struggle to find enough clean water to survive. Residents are forced to take seawater for daily use, despite health risks.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamic. Allah, my Lord.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and welcome, dear listeners, to Youth Station on IRIB English Radio. This is Mustafa.
And this is Asma.
We're both here today to talk about different topics.
Of course. Are you a competitive person?
No, I'm no longer a competitive person. I used to be very competitive.
Yeah, okay? But it was very difficult for me to be brought up into a competition. I mean, even at a school, I used to say that, why are these guys fighting so hard?
I think it's part of our nature, by the way. To sort of be competitive.
But some people don't have that.
But it's to do
with...
They
don't feel the competition.
It's to do with your ego, right? You mm-hmm. want to feel good. And in a competition, you get to prove yourself better than others.
Yeah.
So your ego feels inflated.
Why do I have to prove myself better than others?
So that's unfortunately, you know, I would say competition has like pros and cons. It has its advantage and disadvantage. So that's one of the disadvantages, like that you just mentioned, that I feel like I must prove myself to others.
Yeah,
you don't have to do that.
I don't have to.
But there's a lot of positives, right? Don't you think?
Yes, because if you don't have it, you're not going to try harder.
Right. And by the way, when I started actually performing better in school, it was when I was 13 years old. One of mm-hmm. my classmates told me, "Hey, Mustafa, you can never be number one in the class." Okay. So I was like, just to prove him
wrong.
I can be number
just
one. He has to prove this guy wrong. I did become number one in the class. And since then, I've been doing really well academically. Okay.
So it had a great impact on you.
It had a great impact on me. And yeah. I actually went to a really, really competitive school. It was an all-boys school back in our country. But yeah, it was healthy in the sense that it allowed me to work harder. It mm-hmm. motivated me.
Yeah.
But the disadvantage was that it comes with a lot of ego in it. And you have to be
exactly.
able to control that. I don't know how to do that.
Yes, you know, it would sometimes. Improve your ego. Then whatever your ego wants, you have to fit it. I was just thinking about that guy who said that thing to you.
We became friends later on. When he said this to me, we weren't...
When you became a part of their community.
See, when you're 13 years old, I guess it's different when... I don't know how different it is for girls, but when you're a 13-year-old guy, everything is about proving yourself. Everything is about proving yourself to be better mm-hmm. than the other guy.
Yeah, well, girls always try that.
That's where it becomes harmful to us, you know, when we make it about our ego. When we make it about we have to prove ourselves to be better than others. In fact, that's what I guess Iblis's problem was with Hazrat Adam, is that he wanted to show that he was better, right?
Yeah.
Even now he's competing with us,
mm-hmm.
right? He's trying to...
Yeah. And a lot of the stories comes out of competition, like the story of Abel and his brother. His fight with his brother for the sacrifice, who's going to offer the better sacrifice. So we even have the trace of that in...
Prophet Yusuf's
brothers
were competing, you know. So
so if we don't try to prove ourselves to other people, we won't get into that trap.
So you have to... I think everything comes with pros and cons, right?
Yes.
And we have to know how best to manage those pros and cons.
And not to get into an extreme point.
Yeah. And it's the same with competition, right? For example, competitive sports are very good, right? Even Ayatollah Khamenei, for example, in his speeches has encouraged, you know, he's talked so much about sports. He's always like praising like athletes who are doing well in sports.
Yeah.
So there's nothing, we're not against it, right? We're not saying that there shouldn't be competition. There definitely needs to be competition. We can't mm-hmm. remove that from society.
Yeah.
Like, for example, you know, what do you think would happen if businesses weren't competing with each other?
They would never grow.
Right? A business, they won't provide better services.
Yeah.
They
won't develop into betterment.
So we definitely need it. It's just a matter of removing sort of the negatives
of
it.
Yeah, the negative parts.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For example, even in academic places, if you're not competing with others, then again, there wouldn't be any evolving in the process.
Yeah. I mean, in my school, they used to announce all the rankings, like who's the first, second, third.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
I can tell you nowadays, a lot of schools, they've completely removed rankings from schools.
This is a very good job.
You think so?
Yeah, it's very good.
Do Iranian schools have rankings?
Yeah, they used to have, but right now I don't know. But even still, they have that. And they would honor the guys who've got the best scores, and then the others are just going to look at them. I don't like that.
See, because I went to a really competitive school, I don't know how this new model is. The new model, I would say, one good thing in that is maybe they're focusing more on learning. Right?
Which is better.
It is better. When
Which
you're
is
focusing
the purpose?
Only on rankings, then a lot of times people don't focus on learning. All they care about is grades, right?
Yeah, because, you know, I used to see a lot of these people who get the best scores, but they did not learn things. Their scores was just a mere fact of their memorization.
Right.
They didn't go for the ideas that they were learning about. They were just memorizing things.
Yeah.
So I guess it's the best time for us to go for a break.
I was just about to say that. Let's go for a break.
Thank you. is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, this is Youth Station again. I'm Asma, along with Brother Mustafa. We're just talking about competition, the pros and cons. And everybody, whenever we say the word competition, everybody would remember school. I am sure of that, 100%, because the first time we'll learn to be competitive is when we're at a school.
Well, it's a big part of growing up.
Yeah. Right?
I don't think you can remove it from, like, children. Like,
but, you know, if we go towards learning with no competition, I think children are going to be more productive.
I don't know about that. Why would you think that?
They would be more creative, you know, because right now I am coming to this point. Because at university, when you see the students are too much engaged about the scores and whatsoever, they lose their sense of creativity. We do not have time to think about our own ideas that could be added to these theories.
But at the same time, I think competition brings with it, for example, a source of motivation for people, right? Especially with younger kids, like they're maybe 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. Like if you remove the competition, right, between them, like they may not be as motivated to do well. Don't you think?
I have the other side
of this.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think like competition might be good to some extent. To some extent that I know that my works are going to be evaluated in the end of the way. Not just be ignored because it's not to be considered.
Well, I think it also has a lot to do with sort of the rewards that are attached to the outcome of that competition, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're putting out rewards, that can create, for example, problems, right? But where competition can be healthy, for example, is let's say you have a class of students and you're trying to teach them math. You can create a math game and the teams compete against each other to solve problems.
Yeah, that's the problem. See, you're talking about team. I don't know about your school, but what we have in our own schools is all about individuals. Individuals are fighting against each other.
Well, it depends. I was giving an example where team competition can be healthy. Right?
Team competition, yes.
Even on an individual level, on where the outcome isn't necessarily like a big reward, but just like you're trying to encourage learning through that.
Yeah. So I guess what we're doing right now in here is just more related to educational system, which is not the purpose of our talk. What about competition in real life?
Well, I was using education as an example.
Yeah.
Right. I think it can be applied.
We're
for example,
just running out of time, so I just want to get to the core of our discussion. Like competition, when it happens in real life, it would lead to, as one point mentioned by me, then you can say your own point.
Yeah.
It could lead to envy, to feel envious about other people, or actually to feel greedy more, and then to try to.
But I
don't know, hurt
but I
people.
Think those are more individual problems, right? In the sense that you can feel envy without competition. Like, for example, if somebody has more than you, somebody has achieved more than you in life, sometimes that's the source of envy, right? I don't think necessarily competition itself is like the core source of that problem.
No, you see, media would make you feel like you are in a competition. The people around
you. Yeah, what needs to be addressed is the person feeling envy, not like removing competition from...
No. Removing competition, yes.
Yeah.
We said already competition has got its benefits and also it has some bad points in it. But I'm saying one of the bad things that might come out of competition could be envy, even out of school, even in places that people are prone to competition. Like even in a family, when there are two brothers, then the family is going to compare them to each
That's
other.
That's definitely true. And like we mentioned, that even in the Prophet Yaqub's, you know, in Prophet Yusuf's case, that couldn't be avoided, right? It's not as if like God had to give those attributes to like, say, the Prophet Yusuf, right? God didn't say, I'm not going to give him these attributes because the brothers are going to feel jealous, right? He was like, the brothers have to correct themselves.
Yeah, they had to go through the process of development.
Yeah, it's their mistake.
It took them too long.
Yeah, it's their fault, right?
Yeah.
Even in Islam, I would say God, for example, says to us, you know, that he presents religion or religious deeds almost like with the word of business, right? He says, do business with me, right? He uses those verses, right? Mm-hmm. When you're doing business, when you're, he says, compete for good deeds amongst each other.
Yeah.
Which of you can be better in good deeds? So overall, if you were to ask me if I think, you know, competition is a good or bad thing, I would say it's, overall it's a very good thing as long as we can sort of manage the negative side effects.
Well, I would say competition is not good. But then as a human being, you have to think that, okay, I have the responsibility, the duty as a human being to improve myself as much as I can, as much as my capacity allows me, not as much as the other people are asking me to be.
I feel like you can't like separate competition from motivation. Yeah. They're sort of intertwined and interlinked with each other.
Yeah.
So for me, I think competition, like I use it on my kids as a way to sort of make them do more things, right? For example, we'll have a competition of cleaning up the house. Who can like clean up like, you know, this area faster?
That's a good technique parents use, but I'm not with it.
Okay, what would you do alternatively? But are you going to sit down and tell the child, you know, cleaning is very good for you and for the environment?
No, we do cleaning all together. There's no competition over that.
Kids are not that easygoing that you're going to say, hey, let's all go and clean together.
Yes, all will do the cleaning. And then after that, for example, we'd go walking. I don't know. We'd go doing something together again.
Trust me, it's not that easy, okay?
Yeah, maybe just as a parent, I cannot be the best person who could say anything because I'm not a parent myself. But according to what I have been going through as a sibling, yeah. I'm telling you, those competitions are not going to work.
Well, I also competed a lot with my siblings as well, by the way. It's not like I have two older brothers and an older sister, okay? So I was in the worst position possible, right? I was in that point of view, okay? But I found personally competition has served a positive role in my life, you know, in terms of schooling, education, family. Yes, there have been times where it has a negative impact, but that's true with everything in life.
Exactly.
Right? I don't think there's some of the things that, for example, that you mentioned that could cause envy. I would say someone who's gaining knowledge, you could be envious of them. People become envious of people who have more knowledge than them.
Yeah.
Right? So we really have to deal with those things on our own, not the actual, like, you're not going to tell that person.
Not the actual person.
You're not going to tell them, hey, stop gaining knowledge because other people are becoming envious, right? Yeah.
But I love that quote that you mentioned. I would like to compete with myself. That's a better choice.
That's also what my karate coach says as well. He says that, you know, your biggest enemy is yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you, and that's also a saying from Imam Ali. He says your biggest enemy is between your shoulders, right? Yeah. And that's you.
Yeah. So I have to solve everything from within.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a better choice. So this is all the time that we have for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Until another session, I just bid you farewell from me and from Brother Mustafa. Bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
This is Gaza Under Attack, coming to you from the British capital, London. My name's Amina Taylor, and I'll be your guide, helping you to unpack some of the biggest talking points emerging from the bombardment of Gaza by Israel and its ongoing raids in the West Bank. But first, let's bring you up to speed on some of the most recent developments. Overnight, there have been scores more Palestinians killed, bringing the total to north of 20,000 Palestinians martyred. At the United Nations, the Security Council adoption of a new UN resolution to get humanitarian aid into Gaza has been delayed. A vote on the Arab-sponsored resolution, first postponed from Monday, has been pushed back until Thursday as council members continue intense negotiations to avoid another veto by the United States. Meanwhile, the humanitarian crisis deepens with a UNICEF report saying displaced children in southern Gaza are accessing only 1.5 to 2 liters of water a day, well below the requirements for survival. The UN special coordinator said the bombardment of Gaza means 2023 ends as one of the deadliest years, with the situation deteriorating on all fronts. The UN is also warning about the risk for escalation in the region, citing the possibility of a miscalculation setting off a wider conflict. In the run-up to Christmas, global charities continue to add their voices in calling for a cessation of violence. Now joining this edition of Gaza Under Attack are in studio, a welcome return to Jonathan Chadwick. Jonathan is a theatre director, writer and teacher. He's produced and directed a series of short plays about war, including the UK premiere of Woman in War by the celebrated Iraqi writer and director Jawad al-Asadi. And via Skype, doctor and analyst Ali Husseini joining us from London. Good to see you both. And Jonathan, I remember it was quite a few weeks back where you graced that very sofa and we asked you for your thoughts on how did we manage to have over 10,000 souls taken, and yet here we are with that number doubled. Your reflections?
Well, I mean, one reflects with grief at the loss of life in Gaza at the moment. But if you're asking me whether I'm surprised that that escalation has happened in the number of people killed, I don't think I'm surprised. I think that what was happening then, which was during the truce, that was the last time that we spoke, I think at the end of that truce, when the Israeli, whatever he was, probably a public relations person, told us that the Gaza people were going to receive the mother of all thumpings, I think that it was clear anyway that that Israel was going to start the killing again at a very, very escalated level, and that's exactly what's happened. Nothing that the Americans said about precise targeting has really entered their strategic toolbox, and they've continued their assault on the Gaza people. But of course, and also you're right to mention the West Bank, and perhaps it's also worth mentioning what's happening in the northern frontier of Israel, and also what's happening in the Red Sea area with the
which is one of these fears about this becoming an all-encompassing regional situation.
I think that most of the players that are a part of the axis of resistance don't want to see that escalation. And what I think one's witnessed over this period is, first of all, hard resistance from Hamas on the ground in Gaza. And that's been an important stopping activity for the Israelis. That's driven the Israelis into creating and executing dreadful atrocities in Gaza. And you can see that it's an army that doesn't know who the enemy is. And if you were a military commander and you don't know who the enemy is, then you're in trouble. And I think the Israelis are really deeply in trouble. And that's shown by the slightly frantic nature of the kind of atrocities that they've carried out. I mean, to shoot people waving a white flag,
who are half naked.
Exactly. I mean, this just shows that they have no sense of who they're up against, and that's the reason why they're losing the battle.
Dr. Husseini, I'd just like to bring you in on that similar point about your own reflections, where we are.
As your respected guest in the studio was alluding to, it's becoming clear that it's a losing battle for Israel and its strong army and also strong supporters, mainly because it has lost direction first, and it has been confused so much so that even its own people carrying the white flag so that they can be received by their own army were shot dead on the spot from zero distance, which just suggests that everybody is at a loss at the moment. And as your respected guest was alluding to, it seems to be that this episode is heading towards a major strategic loss to Israel and to the backers of Israel, plus the fact that the international community standoff is not helping the situation.